Mr. President, Excellencies, distinguished delegates and observers, let me welcome you all very warmly to FAO, which is indeed honored to be the forum for the first and thus critical session of the United Nations World Food Council. May I in particular express my great pleasure at the fact that you, sir, should have been elected to preside over this session. With all that you did last year to bring the World Food Conference to its high point of achievement, it is most fitting that you should, in this way, provide the continuity between that conference and this Council, whose creation crowned its efforts. This, Mr. President, is not only the first, but also the last occasion I have of addressing the World Food Council as Director General of FAO. I hope I may therefore be permitted the liberty of being frank. The World Food Conference last November was, I think, considered to be one of the most important events in recent years in matters of concern to the United Nations system. It was held because there was finally a realization of the fact that the world was drifting towards catastrophe in its management of the problems of feeding the human population. Indeed, at the time the conference took place, it looked as if there was not enough food physically available to keep literally millions of people alive. Reports were coming in that large-scale famines were imminent in some parts of the world. For these reasons, the World Food Conference was taken very seriously, although it must be said that for many people at the Palazzo dei Congressi and in the world outside, there was something disturbingly unreal about the way in which the discussions concentrated so heavily on long-term and sometimes theoretical or procedural issues, remote from the immediate realities of hunger and threatened mass starvation that large sections of human society were facing at that very moment. Nevertheless, it is true that the world food situation was analyzed more thoroughly than ever before at a high political level, and that the recommendations of the conference, although not, in my view, going far enough, marked a notable step forward by the international community in its attempt to tackle the problems that prevent the world from being able to provide enough food for all its inhabitants. 7 months have now passed since the conference. Thanks to a number of short-term measures that have been taken, the immediate food crisis that faced us then has now faded. Prices of food and fertilizers have been coming down. Present forecasts for most crops in 1975 are encouraging. So there is once again a tendency for people to think that they can relax about a world food situation. Nothing, Mr. President, could be more short-sighted. The question may be asked, do we never learn from history and experience? In 1945, there was powerful concern about a world food situation, all the more powerful, but perhaps because a number of the countries we now call developed were threatened on that occasion. But then, within a relatively short space of time, their prospects began to improve. They soon felt confident enough to discard politely Lord Boyd Orr's great design for a world food board. Along with general economic recovery in those countries, the world started moving into a situation where there were again surpluses of food. The food outlook in general continued to look fairly good for a number of years, except, of course, for all the millions of people in developing countries, and they weren't even countries then, most of them, permanently suffering from hunger and malnutrition. But then, did they not really count for all that much, did they? However, by the middle of the 1960s, the plight of vast numbers of them in some parts of the world had become so grave that a general cry of alarm at last went up. Starvation on a massive scale was, in fact, only narrowly averted, chiefly due to emergency shipments of food from the United States and Canada. Then, with nobody really certain whether the crisis had passed or not, lo and behold, there came the Green Revolution. The scientists had solved the world food problem. Thus again, an easygoing mood of unconcern set in, so easygoing in fact, that it took little or no account of how far the Green Revolution was actually proving successful in practice. And so finally we come to the world food crisis of the years since 1972. Still greater and steadily mounting alarm, more emergency measures, and eventually the World Food Conference. Surely then, Mr. President, and you have emphasized this in your introductory remarks, we should have learned enough by now to realize that the one thing we cannot afford to do is to relax again. Even such temporary improvements as have taken place or are in sight in the short-term situation could not justify this for a moment. It is true that the immediate crisis that loomed so large last November is over for the time being, but it could well return in an even more acute form in the course of the year or so ahead. We broadly estimate that the most seriously affected countries, the MSAs, will face a very large food gap in the 1975-76 season that could be anywhere between 14 million and 20 million tons. Their import requirements of fertilizers and pesticides for their own food production will also continue to be high and more costly than in the past. How are these needs to be financed at a time when their general economic situation is growing even worse due to the fall in commodity prices? Clearly, they are going to suffer greatly without considerably increased international assistance over the next year. Nor should the prospects of better harvests this year lead us to believe that there is going to be much of an improvement in the basic food situation in the short term. If we are lucky and the weather proves generally favorable, there may well be some replenishment of world stocks of grain. But these stocks are at present even lower than they were a year ago, far below minimum safe levels for world food security in the case of widespread crop failures. The maximum replenishment we could hope for this year, say about 25 million tons, would still leave them well short of these levels. Even more important, the bulk of the increases in food production expected this year will be in developed countries. And it is in developing countries where, ominously, there was for the first time last year a drop in the rate of increase in the use of fertilizers that prospects are once again most uncertain. But of course, Mr. President, it is not just a short-term outlook that is at stake. Even if it were a great deal brighter than it is, the main lesson of the last 30 years is that we dare not again relax about the world food situation for as far ahead as it is now possible to see. The great achievement of the World Food Conference was that governments finally reached the point of agreeing on the need for action on something like the scale required for a very long period to come. In addition, however, this agreement was the expression of a concerted political will that has always been lacking in the past with regard to the world food situation. So the agreement was both long-term and political, and it was to follow it up in both these dimensions that this World Food Council was created. But it also implies that the Council requires to turn its immediate attention to some of these long-term aspects of the recommendations of the conference, which clearly demand that action should commence now. It is the speed with which this Council now proceeds to tackle these long-term issues at the political level, simultaneously, of course, with the short-term ones, that will be the real measure of the international community's resolve not to relax about the world food situation. The crucial question, of course, as the World Food Conference itself stressed, is how to bring about fast enough a massive continuing increase in food and agricultural production in developing countries. What real action is being taken by countries to achieve this? The question must first, I think, be put to developing countries themselves. In the past, as I have often pointed out, too many of these countries have failed to invest sufficient of their resources in the agricultural sector. Nor have a lot of them been prepared to take the far-reaching measures to reform agrarian structures and improve income distribution, which are essential for the creation of the much greater effective demand for agricultural products that is required. How many of these countries are now prepared to declare that they are making whatever changes of policy are necessary to remedy these matters on a scale that is needed? Changes of policy are, of course, also needed on the part of developed countries. So far as trade is concerned, there are hopeful signs that more of these countries do realize the need to provide larger entry to their markets of raw materials and processed products from developing countries. The signing of the Lomé Convention was a new breeze of promise in this direction. But the broad question still remains: to what extent are the developed countries as a whole now prepared to open up their markets much more generally to the agricultural exports of developing countries? There is also, of course, the question of the greatly increased flow of external resources that are required for agricultural development in developing countries. Here again, we have all, I think, been heartened by the hopeful progress regarding the International Fund for Agricultural Development that was made at a special meeting of interested countries, which was convened early last month in Geneva by the Secretary General of the United Nations. But despite the general support for the fund that emerged there, following a lead by the representative of Saudi Arabia and others, and that has since been reaffirmed separately by Secretary of State Kissinger on behalf of the United States, many issues still have to be resolved before the fund is actually established. I hope that the preparatory work will rapidly proceed to the states where countries will be able to make firm, specific commitments to the fund. And I also hope, Mr. President, that in making them, they will act with true generosity. More generally, I would urge all those concerned with external resources for agricultural development in developing countries to keep constantly and urgently in mind the need to bring those resources up to the level of $5 billion a year by 1980 that was regarded as necessary in the documentation worked out for the World Food Conference and that was not contested by the conference itself. Another urgent matter, although in a somewhat different context, is that of world food security, where the key concept that emerged from the World Food Conference was that the burden of responsibility for stock building should be shared among all countries according to their means and possibilities. Some developed countries now seem to take the view that they must wait for the outcome of the negotiations in the International Wheat Council and GATT before they can proceed much further with this. I understand their reasons. But in view of what I said earlier about the short-term situation, surely it is clear that the setting up of effective arrangements for world food security is something that simply cannot wait. Nor should such arrangements for meeting essential human needs be smothered by the trade aspects of the food security issue and get lost in the process of bargaining. Returning to the question of increased agricultural production in developing countries, let me say that following the World Food Conference, we in FAO have been giving considerable thought to a question which is of particular importance to the United Nations system as well as to the countries concerned. I am referring to the various forms of technical assistance in which we have cooperated with them over the years. There is no doubt that while greatly increased resources are needed, so are more effective projects directed towards investment itself, not studies, investment. In the past, technical assistance projects have been mainly designed to provide aid in various fields without being sufficiently linked to productive investment. This does not mean that they haven't been useful, but after all, it is the amount of actual investment in agricultural development that makes the major impact. Generally speaking, there have been two main reasons why many projects have not led to productive investment. On the part of governments, there has too often been a lack of coordination between the agricultural authorities and those especially in the financial domain who determine investment priorities and for whom agriculture all too frequently has not ranked sufficiently high. On the part of international organizations, there has been a lack of sufficient knowledge of overall national priorities. Sometimes approaches to the different sectoral problems have not even been coordinated to the extent of making it possible to engage in a serious dialogue with governments to assist them in their own determination of such priorities. Thus, two things are clearly needed. Firstly, greater resolve by governments of developing countries to invest in specific agricultural projects to which they commit themselves and for which they do the necessary financial planning. Secondly, a closer dialogue between these governments and organizations such as ours to ensure that we know more about these commitments and plans and are thus in a position to orient our projects more to what governments themselves want to do. But in addition, a much closer dialogue is also clearly necessary between the organizations engaged in technical assistance and those dealing in investment in order to reduce the length of the cycle of pre-investment and investment by means of an effective tripartite understanding between governments, technical assistance organizations, and financial institutions. If all this were brought about, the assistance that we provide would serve a much more effective purpose, especially in the light of what is now expected of us following the World Food Conference. Mr. President, I have talked about resources and about investment. These are, of course, key matters in any strategy for increasing agricultural production in developing countries. They are matters to which the developing countries themselves must give further thought so as to respond as actively as possible in accordance with their own requirements and their own chosen ways of pursuing a better life for all their peoples. They also raise the questions to which the richer nations must respond, whether by bringing about changes in their bilateral aid and their relations with multilateral agencies such as FAO and UNDP, or by making full use of this extremely valuable new channel for orienting investment, the consultative group on food production and investment that also emerged from the World Food Conference. Finally, of course, they are matters of vital concern to this World Food Council. But, Mr. President, in this whole context of the world food crisis, we cannot limit ourselves to questions of resources and investment. We cannot just think in terms of satisfying a market demand, for those who tend to suffer most are so poor as to be beyond the reach of markets as we understand them. Nor is it merely by mitigating famine conditions that we can hope to ease the plight of the 500 million people or so who live in the constant grip of hunger and malnutrition. Much more needs to be done, and indeed much of it perhaps goes beyond the direct mandate of the World Food Council. As has been said many times before, there must be an all-out drive for economic and social development in the poorer nations, so that, for example, people everywhere have enough work to afford to buy the food they need. Without such a drive, even the target of an average growth rate of food production in developing countries of 3.6% a year that was put into the World Food Conference will not be enough if all are to be properly fed. To speak frankly, Mr. President, it is clear that such a transformation cannot be brought about within the next 10 years. And despite all the measures we are envisaging for increasing food production in developing countries, I would not like to say when even the 3.6% target can be met. In the meantime, therefore, there will have to be a considerable increase in food aid, especially for vulnerable groups. The minimum target of 10 million tons of grain a year, as food aid recommended by the World Food Conference, was indeed a step forward. But it is still much too low for reasonable standards of nutrition in the developing countries. It does seem to be inescapable that the most urgent need that the Council will be faced with in the immediate years ahead will be for a radical increase in food aid on a guaranteed basis, a need, however, that can be progressively diminished as the longer-term measures for a lasting increase in food production in developing countries hopefully begin to take greater effect. And it is, of course, for the success of these longer-term measures that the world ultimately looks to this Council. Mr. President, we are frequently told that we are living in a world of change. This is, I think, particularly true of this present moment when the majority of countries are justifiably pressing for a new international economic order, and when at last the world seems ready to confront the huge challenge of poverty, hunger and malnutrition. This time of change and the particularly grave responsibilities which it imposes on the World Food Council recall some famous lines of Shakespeare. There is a tide in the affairs of men which, taken at a flood, leads on to fortune. Omitted, all the voyage of their lives is bound in shallows and in miseries. Mr. President, we are indeed, I believe, at the turn of a tide. The fortune to which it should lead on is no more than the very least that men can have a right to hope from their lives. Shallows and miseries are all that too many of them have known for too long. It is indeed high time that the world should change. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much.